Today is Friday, the 1st of May, and you are listening to the World Socialist Website. Join the May Day online rally for socialism against war, genocide, and fascism. By the WSWS Editorial Board. Today is May Day, the International Day of Working Class Solidarity. The International Committee of the Fourth International and the World Socialist Website are holding our 13th annual International May Day online rally at 3 p.m. EDT. We appeal to all those looking to fight for socialism and to put an end to the capitalist system to register and attend. The ruling class has devoted endless efforts to stamp out class consciousness, to deny and cover up the immense tradition of class struggle in America. Indeed, May Day was born in the United States. 140 years ago, on May 1st, 1886, hundreds of thousands of American workers struck to demand the 8-hour day. The center of the movement was Chicago, where 80,000 workers participated. 3 days later, on the evening of May 4th, a peaceful workers' rally in Haymarket Square came under violent assault by the police. A bomb exploded. In the explosion and police melee, 7 officers and 4 workers were killed. The ruling class of Chicago seized upon the incident to launch a violent witch hunt of Chicago workers. There was not a shred of evidence connecting any of the speakers or organizers to the bombing, but 8 anarchist and socialist labor leaders were seized, tried in a travesty of justice that set the precedent for state violence and pseudo-legal frame-ups. 4 workers, August Spies, Adolf Fischer, George Engel, and Albert Parsons, were hanged on November 11th, 1887. Another, Louise Ling, was driven to suicide in his cell. The cause for which the Haymarket martyrs gave their lives was embraced by the working class all over the world. 3 years later, in 1889, the founding Congress of the Second International, meeting in Paris, resolved that May 1st would be the day on which workers of all countries would simultaneously demonstrate for the 8-hour day. From that day forward, May 1st has belonged to the international working class. The 8-hour day was the central demand of those first May Days. Today, May Day is a fight for the survival of human civilization itself. Indeed, such is the state of exploitation that even the most elementary conquest of the workers' movement, the 8-hour day, has been abandoned by the trade union apparatus. While AFL-CIO functionaries organise May Day strong events with the Democratic Party, workers in the warehouses, hospitals, schools and factories endure 10, 12 and 14-hour shifts. The celebration of May Day came to be embedded in the fight for the unity of the international working class against capitalism, inequality and exploitation, a day dedicated to advancing the struggle for workers' power. Leon Trotsky wrote in 1918 that the original purpose of May Day had been, by means of a simultaneous demonstration by workers of all countries on that day, to prepare the ground for drawing them together into a single international proletarian organization of revolutionary action, having one world center and one world political orientation. That task, the construction of an international revolutionary leadership of the working class, remains the unfinished historical work of our epoch. It is the work of the International Committee of the Fourth International. The annual International May Day online rallies of the ICFI, held now for 13 consecutive years, have been organised in this spirit. They are not occasions for the empty radical phrases by which the labour bureaucracy and its adjuncts mask their alliance with the capitalist state. Each rally has been an indispensable stage in the development of the perspective of the world socialist movement. Since the first International May Day online rally in 2014, the International Committee has issued a central warning at these rallies: the imperialist redivision of the world, driven by the insoluble contradictions of capitalism, is propelling humanity toward global catastrophe. Those warnings have been confirmed. World war is not a future possibility. It is an unfolding reality. The US-Israeli war of aggression against Iran, launched on February 28th, is the most explosive expression to date of a worldwide escalation of militarism. Two interconnected processes predominate. First is the advance of war, and with it, the turn to fascism and dictatorship, and an unrestrained assault on the working class. This finds its sharpest expression in the United States, where Trump, the president of the oligarchs, tears up democratic rights, unleashes the immigration police as an instrument of political terror, and demands that society be reorganized around militarism and repression. Second is the growing resistance of the international working class. The May Day rally will document the developing struggles of workers and youth across continents, and elaborate the program and strategy required to unify these battles into a conscious movement against war, dictatorship, and capitalism. Speakers will include leading representatives of the ICFI and its supporting organizations from the United States, Britain, France, Germany, Sri Lanka, Australia, New Zealand, Turkey, Brazil, and Russia, along with representatives of the International Youth and Students for Social Equality and the International Workers' Alliance of rank-and-file committees. The rally will feature statements collected from workers and young people on every continent: postal workers, auto workers, teachers, dock workers, students, who are entering into struggle and looking for a way forward. The May Day rally will provide an assessment of this world situation, the history and meaning of the war in Iran, the drive toward dictatorship and the collapse of bourgeois democratic forms, and the accelerating eruption of class struggle internationally. This rally is not a commemoration. It is a call to action. The ruling class is organizing society for war abroad and class war at home, and it is doing so with the assistance of the trade union apparatus and all the capitalist parties. The May Day rally will arm workers and youth with a program, a strategy, and an international organizational perspective for the fight ahead. Register now at wsws.org/Mayday. The rally begins at 3 p.m. US Eastern Time. Gather your co-workers, your classmates, your families, your friends. Today, May 1st, 2026, take your place in the international socialist movement. Senate Democrats voice support for major surge in military spending at Hegseth briefing. By Andre Damon. Leading Senate Democrats called Thursday for a major expansion of U.S. military spending at the testimony by Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, who was briefing the Senate Armed Services Committee. Hegseth was testifying on the Trump administration's $1.535 trillion fiscal year 2027 Pentagon budget request, a near 50% jump in a single year that would lift military outlays to roughly 4.5% of gross domestic product. Funding the build-up requires a frontal assault on what remains of the federal social safety net, with Republican leaders preparing further cuts to Medicaid, food stamps, and Social Security through reconciliation. Hegseth spoke as the representative of a completely criminal government, personally advocating that U.S. troops commit war crimes, including upon direct questioning at the hearing. In the face of a broadly unpopular administration, the Democrats made it their highest priority to emphasize, despite tactical disagreements, their solidarity with the Trump administration's megalomaniacal program of world conquest. Their objections were that Trump's plans do not go far enough, or that the Iran war has left the United States unprepared for war with nuclear-armed China and Russia. Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York called for doubling the number of nuclear-capable stealth bombers in the request from 100 B-21 Raiders to 200. We've been working together to grow the industrial base because we are all worried about how our stockpiles would hold up in a conflict against China, Gillibrand said. The B-21, she added, will be a critical part of both our conventional and our nuclear deterrence against China and Russia. Democratic Senator Mark Kelly of Arizona voiced his support for expanding military spending, saying, "I've always been supportive of defense spending in my entire time here. In 25 years in the Navy, I want to make sure our folks have what they need." Democratic Ranking Member Jack Reed of Rhode Island, the senior Democrat on the committee, opened his remarks by saluting the war against Iran. "Tactically, the United States' military performance against Iran has been remarkable," Reed said, "and I salute the service members who executed this mission with skill and bravery." His criticism was that the war has left the United States less prepared for war with China. 3 carrier strike groups have been pulled into the Middle East, leaving the Pacific thinly covered. "In terms of where we're putting the most powerful part of our Navy," Reed asked, "can you explain again what that means in terms of the situation in Indo-PACOM, where China is watching?" His argument was for a larger war, redirected at Beijing. Democratic Ranking Member Adam Smith of Washington took the same line at the parallel House hearing Wednesday, telling Hegseth he had heard the chairman on the need for an increased budget and attacking popular opposition to the war, said, "I strongly disagree with the folks on the far left who say that we don't really face any threats." The New York Times editorial board joined in Thursday with a piece titled, "The US Military Was Losing Its Edge. After Iran, everyone knows it." The Iran war, the Times argued, exposed weaknesses adversaries can now see. The good news is that Congress, the administration, and the Pentagon can all now see our military shortcomings, the editorial concluded. At Thursday's hearing, Republican Chairman Roger Wicker of Mississippi endorsed the Trump administration's military budget as necessary to prepare for military conflict with China. "First and foremost, we're locked in a competition with Xi Jinping and the Chinese Communist Party," Wicker said. "The competition is high stakes, and it is about whether this will be an American-led century or a century defined by authoritarian, autocratic regimes that care little for the needs of their citizens or those in neighboring countries. The Chinese Communist Party has accelerated its historic military build-up and its predatory economic practices against Americans and countries the world over. Xi Jinping leads not only China, but also an axis of aggressors. Of the budget, every penny of it should be money well spent." Hegseth said during Thursday's hearing the administration was putting our defense industrial base back on a wartime footing and building a military that instills nothing less than unrelenting fear in our adversaries. Hegseth detailed the composition: $65 billion for shipbuilding, $120 billion for the defense industrial base, $331 billion for munitions, $44 billion for quality of life, $71 billion on our nuclear triad. The $71 billion nuclear figure is a massive expansion of the US nuclear arsenal. New submarines, bombers, and intercontinental missiles aimed at China and Russia. A further $54 billion goes to a defense autonomous warfare group for drone war. Hegseth dismissed his critics as reckless naysayers and defeatist congressional Democrats and some Republicans, defeatists from the cheap seats. The Democrats had funded the build-up before the war began. The House passed the FY26 National Defence Authorisation Act 312-112 on December 10th, 2025, with the entire Democratic leadership voting yes. The Senate cleared it 77-20. The House approved an $839 billion defence appropriations bill, 341-88, on January 22nd. On February 2nd, 21 House Democrats supplied the margin for a continuing resolution. The US-Israeli assault on Iran began 26 days later. Both chambers then defeated war powers' resolutions to halt it. The criminal character of the administration was on open display at Thursday's hearing. Asked to retract his March 13th order that US troops give enemies in the Caribbean no quarter and no mercy, Hegseth refused. Kelly read him the definition from his own department's Law of War manual, that no legitimate offers of surrender will be refused or that detainees will be executed, and asked twice whether he stood by the statement. Twice, Hegseth replied, "We fight to win." The character of the mission the Democrats endorsed was thus on the record. Democratic Senator Alyssa Slotkin of Michigan told Hegseth, "I agree with the chairman that the world has never been more dangerous and complicated, and we can all agree that we want our military to come out of it safely and successfully." A successful mission, by the Secretary of Defense's own definition, means offering no quarter to those targeted by US imperialism and the destruction of a whole civilization, in the words of Trump. Thursday's hearing took place as the administration moved to defy the 60-day war powers resolution clock on the Iran war. Friday is the statutory deadline by which the president must either seek congressional authorization or certify in writing that more time is required to withdraw US forces. The administration intends to do neither. Hegseth said the White House takes the position that a current ceasefire pauses the clock, a reading with no basis in the statute. Trump was scheduled to be briefed Thursday evening by US Central Command Chief Admiral Bragg Cooper on new military options against Iran, including, per news reports, a powerful series of strikes on Iranian infrastructure, a ground operation to seize part of the Strait of Hormuz, and a special forces mission to secure Iran's stockpile of highly enriched uranium. The Senate Democrats speak for the same capitalist oligarchy as Donald Trump. Their disagreements were operational. Anxiety that the Iran war is going badly. Anxiety that the United States is unprepared for the larger conflict with China, both parties expect. On the question of whether US military spending should surge toward $1.5 trillion to wage that war, Thursday's hearing revealed no disagreement at all. German government passes war budget, agrees to sharp attacks on healthcare. By Peter Schwartz. His predecessor, Olaf Scholz, always said he did not want to play security policy off against social policy, Chancellor Friedrich Merz told Der Spiegel in a detailed interview. "We can no longer afford that," Merz said. "We must set priorities." The cabinet did just that on Wednesday. Military spending has priority. It is being increased sharply, and social spending slashed accordingly. According to the financial benchmarks presented by Finance Minister Lars Klingbeil, Social Democratic Party, the SPD, and adopted by the cabinet, the defence ministry's spending financed from the core budget will rise from €82.2 billion this year to €179.9 billion in 2030. Almost 1 in 3 euros from the federal budget will then flow directly into rearmament and war. in the next 2 years, additional billions will be added from the special fund for the Bundeswehr, the armed forces, passed in 2022, which expires at the end of 2027. Outlays on debt servicing are also rising. Every armament spending is largely financed via additional loans. According to Klingbeil's plans, the government's interest expenditure will climb to 78.7 billion euro by 2030, which is about 12.5% of the budget. This year, it still amounts to 30.3 billion euro. Little will be left for social spending. Parallel to the benchmarks for the budget, the cabinet has initiated a draft law to reform statutory health insurance from Health Minister Nina Warken, the Christian Democratic Union, the CDU. It will now be debated in the Bundestag, federal parliament, and is to be passed before the summer holidays. It will deliver the death blow to healthcare in its current form. As early as next year, the spending of the statutory health insurance funds is to be reduced by 16.3 billion euro. This is to be achieved by cutting and increasing the cost of services, as well as imposing strict savings targets for hospitals and doctors. The latter are to bear the main burden of the cuts. Overall spending in the healthcare sector may only rise as fast as the average contributory income per fund member. This is supposed to save 11.3 billion euro of the total 16.3 billion euro. The consequence will be that hospitals and doctors' practices are faced with the alternative of cutting salaries or laying off staff. Many will go bankrupt or no longer be able to find enough staff willing to do the demanding work while understaffed and poorly paid. Originally, Warken had even proposed savings of 20 billion euro. These have now been slightly reduced so that the individual government parties can point to a success. For example, sick pay is not being cut as originally planned, which the SPD chalks up as a success. The free co-insurance of spouses is being curtailed. Spouses are now only to pay 2.5% of their gross income as a contribution, instead of the originally planned 3.5%, which the Christian Democrats had demanded. But such cosmetic corrections will change nothing about the smashing apart of healthcare, as the cuts will be carried forward year after year, and the consequences will multiply. The mass destruction of well-paid industrial jobs, the rising average age of the population, and growing inflation will further exacerbate the imbalances in the health insurance funds, and entail further austerity measures. The government itself is withdrawing a total of 10 billion euro from the funds. According to original plans, the government was to contribute 1 billion euro in both 2029 and 2030 to the financial consolidation of the health insurance funds. Now it is cutting its subsidies for the years 2027 to 2030 by 2 billion euro each year, for a total of 8 billion euro in cuts in addition to the 2 billion euro not contributed in 2029 and 2030. Finance Minister Klingbeil is thus trying to plug the holes that remain in the current budget planning, despite the high level of new borrowings. In 2028 alone, there is a shortfall of 29 billion euro. Even the frequently raised demand that the federal government should cover the insurance costs for recipients of basic insurance is only being met very gradually. So far, these costs have largely been co-financed by the contributions of those with statutory insurance, while the significantly better earning privately insured do not contribute to them. The 50% increase in co-payments for medication, the cut in subsidies for dentures, and the cancellation of services such as free skin cancer screening, which are part of the agreed draft law, will primarily hit poorer and older people who can no longer afford important medications and treatments. What is completely missing from the draft law, apart from a slight increase in the contribution assessment ceiling, i.e. the income limit up to which the health insurance contributions are payable, are measures that make the rich pay. the massive wealth accumulated through rising stock market prices, exorbitant real estate values, and inherited fortunes do not contribute to these costs. In Germany, there is not even a wealth tax. The problem, therefore, is not that there is not enough money available for good healthcare for everyone, but that healthcare stands in the way of the enrichment and war plans of the ruling elites. It is of interest to them only insofar as it yields profit. Klingbeil's budget plan contains numerous further austerity measures, at the expense of the wider population. Federal subsidies for long-term care, insurance, and pension insurance are also to be cut, and social benefits slashed. In pension insurance alone, 4 billion euro a year are to be saved, even though its requirements are growing due to the increasing number of pensioners. The pension commission set up by the government will not present its report until the summer. Overseas development aid is also to be massively curtailed. In addition, all ministries are to reduce their spending by the 1%, even though inflation is rising sharply again. But the Ministry of Defence is, of course, exempt from this. For these articles and more today, visit the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been John Davis.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.